It's Law and Gospel on this Tuesday, August the 21st in the year of our Lord, 2012. And being a Tuesday, as is our custom here, we are more than happy to have with us Titus. Oh, wait, we don't have Titus. We got Pastor Smith instead.
Yes.
Hi, Pastor Smith.
Hi, Pastor Baker. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Are you excited about talking about Titus?
Well, certainly. Absolutely.
Do you remember who we talked about last week?
Oh, Timothy, yes.
Pardon? What?
Yeah, how swiftly things go. Yeah.
Boy,
Timothy.
Timothy.
Timothy, sure.
And
Titus is an interesting figure.
How so?
Well, he's the one that got the discussion going in Jerusalem when Paul took the offering down to Jerusalem for that for the famine. And
that he had gathered around the Greek world. Yeah.
No, Antioch. He had gathered an offering in Antioch and went down to Jerusalem. And this brought to the fore the whole question, what about these Gentiles? What are we to expect of them? Are they supposed to be circumcised, all of them? Are they going to abide by our dietary laws and all that? This all came to the fore because Titus went with him to take that offering down to Jerusalem. And they said, what is this? This guy, you know, he's of the uncircumcised. You know, he's a Gentile. What are we?
So Titus is not Jewish.
No.
You know, most people think that all the books in the Bible, you know, were written by Jews or to Jews or such. But Timothy was what?
Timothy was a Greek.
Yes. No, I thought he was Jewish.
Wait a minute. He was. Let's see. Now his father was a Greek.
Uh huh. But Titus is strictly Gentile.
Right.
So that what we're talking about here is kind of interesting that...
No, Titus did not write this book, though, Tom.
No, that's true. It's the Epistle of Paul the Apostle to Titus. I always like to make one error at the beginning so you feel good.
You were thinking that Titus wrote this book, didn't you?
It says Titus on it, just like the man named...
It's Paul's letter to Titus.
No.
Go ahead.
Just like the writer, his name is Hebrews.
We don't know who wrote that.
Yeah, some people think...
Charlemagne thinks it's Apollos.
Charlemagne was professor we had at the seminary, Dr. Martin Charlemagne, right. Who, by the way, died next week, his anniversary.
Is that his anniversary? I remember the funeral.
Yes. Also, who did he borrow that from? Do you remember? Apollos? Thinking that Apollos was a writer? He borrowed it from Martin Luther.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, Martin Luther was the one who thought that, in taking a look at it.
That Hebrews was written by Apollos.
Because it's not really the Greek normally
right.
Seen by Paul.
Apollos was supposed to be kind of an eloquent speaker.
Although you got to be a little careful because people will go through and they'll examine the literature and say, this obviously wasn't written by Paul. They use those same techniques in examining the poems or the plays of Shakespeare and figured out there were at least eight guys who wrote that. Really? That really happened using... So these techniques that... historical critical scholars use who don't believe the Bible, you got to really take them with a grain of salt. This is a Sunday school lesson, second one in a row, about encouraging, I guess, the Sunday school children, the males anyway, to become pastors and perhaps a females teachers or deaconesses in the church. But Paul begins by saying that he's a servant of God and an apostle of Jesus Christ. And he says, verse 4, to Titus, my true son in our common faith. Now, in case they just didn't hear us last week, because he calls Timothy a son also, did he have a bunch of children?
No. These were his sons in the Lord, you know, as far as...
That's right.
He was a Christian mentor to these guys.
He sets down the criteria of being a pastor. And I wonder why I'm a pastor, because verse 6 says that a man is to be blameless. Now,
you know, it's like Paul says, who is sufficient for these things?
But then if nobody is, then nobody could be a pastor. So what is meant by this? Are you blameless?
Blameless, I think he means that I think he means that in a relative sense, that we are to be above reproach.
Above reproach.
Now, obviously, we are blameless from God's perspective when he looks at us through Christ's righteousness.
Well, then any Christian could be a pastor.
That's right. That's obviously not what
women, children.
That's right. No, but you've got to be above reproach.
But just because you are doesn't mean you can be a pastor.
That is right.
You have to be called. Well, the other one is you have to be the husband of one wife.
Right.
And that kind of leads out women, although today it may not.
You don't. Let's not even get on that subject.
Well,
right?
Gay marriage, that's yes, correct. We
right.
will leave that off because that's not God's way of thinking at all. But this is the reason why, one of the reasons, there's others in the scripture why only males are to have the pastoral office in God's mind. But this blameless is kind of interesting. In fact, it's repeated twice in verse 7. For a bishop, and by the way, the word there could be translated
pastor.
Overseer. Right. Must be blameless as a steward of God. And then kind of gives some indication. Not self-willed.
Not overbearing.
Not
Tom.
Overbearing. Okay, I'll listen to you, Mark.
Okay.
Yes, since you are bearing over me.
Okay.
I've never seen
Let's
that side
go on.
Of you come out. Last time he'll try that, folks. Not given to wine. Wait a minute. If you're not given the wine, how can you do the Lord's Supper?
No, he's talking about not given to drunkenness on wine.
Well said, yes. And not quick-tempered. Okay. Boy, the more I read this, I can't figure out why I'm a pastor. No, I did have this one. Husband of one wife.
You're not quick-tempered.
No, I'm not.
Maybe a little overbearing, but not quick.
Well, luckily, overbearing's not in here. Not violent, not greedy for money, but hospitable. A lover, what is good, sober-minded, just, holy, self-controlled. Now, what I've discovered, looking over the centuries, notice he doesn't give any specifics.
Right.
Well, but he's talking, like when he says blameless.
Right.
You see, I do believe that in some countries and in some areas, being blameless would mean something different. For example, we found out very early in the Near East, when our missionaries would go over there, they were taught to walk slowly. Because if they ever were running to an appointment or hurrying,
that was not dignified.
That was not dignified. People thought that they weren't in control of their life. They're not going to listen to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there are many other, in fact, here at the seminary, which is on the grounds of a radio station, KFUO, of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, they actually, during the summer, will have a 2 or 3 week orientation for missionaries going to various countries to teach them the customs
right.
there so they don't
offend anybody,
yeah.
without meaning to, you know.
For example, and we'll use the secular world for this, Oprah Winfrey went over to Africa recently and said, I heard you people eat with your hands. And of course, that's the way they do it there. They don't have forks and knives. And she got a little embarrassed. And of course, she started trying to eat with her hands too. But I understand that the people in that area didn't think much of her at all. Because
of that comment.
Just of that comment. I mean, I tell you, it's hard to be a missionary.
Oh, I'll tell you. Well, there's so many things you can do without realizing it.
Oh,
and really come off offensive to people. I mean, don't know their customs.
Well said. For example, at the time of Paul, I wouldn't think anything today of going to the market and buying food that was maybe offered to an idol. But in that day, people thought that when you ate that food, you were becoming part of the idol.
See? Right. Right. Well, I've heard of cultures too where if they invite you over to a dinner and if you don't belch at the end of the dinner, you've offended them.
Oh my!
I mean, if you can imagine that.
Whereas in
the United different
States,
that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know
if
that,
you do it here, you offend them.
Right.
Yeah. So, there's a lot of things today. For example, my mother wouldn't go into a house if there was allowed smoking. Not only because she was against it, but also because she did get ill.
Right.
Just from secondhand smoke. So there not to offend her. See, it was really easy then. Anytime we didn't want to come over, we just put a bunch of cigarettes out. No. But it's like having a Jewish person come over. You wouldn't feed them?
No, you wouldn't serve pork or anything.
Right. Yeah, well, that's it. Exactly, exactly. So when it says the bishop must be blameless, I really believe, and you kind of hit it on it, what that means is you ought not have a reputation of being kind of odd or dumb or saying something that is kind of inappropriate. For example, can you imagine if I was in Bible class and they said, there's a new movie out about Jesus marrying Mary Magdalene. And I would say, yeah, I'm not sure if that's correct or not. Now, how long do you think I would stay there as pastor? You see, and this is the main point. It's kind of interesting that the text goes to verse 1 of chapter 2. But as for you, speak the things which are proper for sound doctrine.
Right.
It appears to me that there also needs to be an aptness to teach that he talks about.
Yes, he does talk about it in the other list of attributes for a pastor.
Yes.
Apt to teach is listed.
That's why you and I went to almost 4 years at the seminary with a year of training as part of that 4 years at a congregation, vicarage it's called. And why I continued to study, as you did too, you took graduate courses. Because you never stop listening and learning. But if a pastor was known to believe that Jesus could have married Mary Magdalene and they had children, I don't think anybody would call him in this denomination. No. Now, if he came to realize that he was wrong, it would appear that even if he repented of it, he could be forgiven, but that doesn't mean he gets back in the ministry. That there are certain things that you would do today. In fact, I found this very interesting. One of the legislators, was just caught in requesting sexual favor from a 17-year-old.
Yes, I heard about that.
And everybody in the Senate is telling him he has to leave office. And that really surprises me in this day and age, because he wasn't arrested because he didn't do anything wrong illegally. But in this day of homosexuality and this kind of thing,
predatory practices and stuff like
but
that.
But it wasn't. It was by consent.
Right.
But no money was exchanged either. And I'm trying to figure out, wait a minute, how can administrators who are for gay marriage say this was wrong? You know, I'm just confused. But it is so blameful that they don't want him as part of their party, because he's going to bring down others.
Association.
Yeah, exactly, association. A pastor doing that is just terrible. It's just terrible. The fact that we're going through a situation now here in Missouri where somebody was running for the Senate and came out with the remark that I guess if a woman gets accosted, that it's not legitimate if she has a baby, because he was told by doctors that that wouldn't happen. You wouldn't have a baby if it was a true situation. The problem is people are now moving away from him, even if he's apologized. It really doesn't make any difference, because the fact of the matter is that he said, well, I believe the people in Missouri will forgive me. Well, his church may, but there is no forgiveness in the secular world, because in the area of politics, you can say, I'm sorry I said that or something like that, but if it's something that is so outlandish, people are going to have a hard time, you know, still
in
support of him if he has views in those areas that are absolutely contrary. If I were him, I would just simply name the doctors who told him that, and I think he would be okay. But if there were any doctors, they'd be in trouble. Can you imagine a doctor saying something like that?
I don't know. Yeah.
But you see, we see in the area of politics, if you say the wrong thing, you really ought to forfeit your position.
Well, today it's heightened because of the media.
That's correct.
And communication is so quick. All the more important that you really have to weigh your words.
That's good, because in the church for a long time, remember how many priests were accosting children, and nobody knew about it, except some of the cardinals or bishops, because they would transfer them to other parishes where they would continue doing this. It became a huge scandal. So I don't mind scandals coming out. I think that's good when the media does that, and then people can make up their mind. But the fact is that it's just really hard as a pastor, because you know, in another Lutheran denomination, we have not only women pastors, but they're also pro-abortion and therefore lesbianism and this kind of thing, which is absolutely contrary to the Word of God, and yet they still think that they're pastors. In God's mind, they aren't, no matter what they call themselves. It would be like a rogue policeman thinking he's doing police work when he steals things from people, when he stops them, and this sort of thing. Nothing is more important, I've often said, than two choices you make while you're here on earth. Number one, who you marry.
Right, I agree with you.
And number two,
your calling.
No, because God can change that, Dave. In fact, I'm working with a gentleman from California right now who's a painter. And in fact, I've got about 30 conversations going from our listeners right now on various subjects. I kind of added them up yesterday. And he's...
Okay, what's the second thing that's so important?
Well, I'm coming to it. In talking to him as a painter, he's really trying to figure out whether he should become a pastor. And I said, you know, that's just something you're going to have to decide. I can't advise you on that, because as a painter, you can really use those opportunities to share the message of Jesus Christ, because you get inside people's homes and you can talk to them. So if you don't become a pastor, it's not that you're not doing the calling God wanted you.
Right.
So the second most important thing, and I used to say what denomination you join, and I changed that, what congregation you join.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes.
You think that is right up there with marriage as far as your most important choices that you make. Which congregation?
Because that's where your children are going to be raised, in the nurture and admonition of the Lord.
Yeah.
That's where you're going to either be fed by sermons or starved. That's where you're either going to hear true law and gospel, or no law and gospel at all, instead principles of life and things like that. See, what's so dangerous about this is there are many congregations, and we know them well,
right?
Such as a purpose-driven life congregations and these kinds of things, where they refuse to baptize infants. And here's all these people going there and losing out on the opportunity of having the assurance of their infants to be saved. That's a horrible thing going on there. So that's why I say the most important thing you do is what congregation you join. Now, I know people...
You want to make sure it's a good Christ-preaching, law and gospel,
I know Christocentric. Personally, a number of people who joined your church specifically because of your preaching, and some probably also because of the traditional worship services, because in other places where emotion, it becomes more important. In fact, there's a fascinating article in this Concordia Journal. Concordia Journal is a magazine put out by our Concordia Seminary, and it's all about Hispanic ministries, and therefore Hispanics are writing the articles. But this first one I was reading about music, boy, does he hit the nail on the head, because he makes the point that sometimes music can get in the way of the text.
Oh, absolutely.
If you like listening to a piece because
Yes.
of the melody rather than the words,
that's right.
That's a sin, he says.
That's right, because that can get in the way.
And I never.
You know, I can give you a lot of examples.
Well,
too.
I think we can send people to certain churches where the music is great, but the words are really lacking. Let's go to the phone lines right now at 505-7850 or
1-800-730-2727.
And speak with Diana. Hi, Diana.
Hi, pastors. About the worships and the importance of that, but I know people who would pick a church because of the worship, and they meant songs and, you know, music. So that's kind of sad.
Yes,
and also
it is.
About the Todd Akin thing, excuse me, how about all the stuff that Clinton did and said? I mean, he was outrageous, and they forgave him.
If I remember, he lost the House.
Well, he was, and he was...
Clinton?
Yes.
Clinton was impeached.
Yeah, he was impeached, too. That wasn't forgiveness. That's pretty serious,
no,
Diana.
No, he wasn't.
I mean, he wasn't removed from office, but he was impeached.
Well, because the Senate didn't go along with it, but the House did. So well, I think I'd want to have on my record, you know, impeached for... I wouldn't care if it was something that I didn't think was wrong. But, the fact is, when you have the two sides, say the Republicans and the Democrats, anything that comes up that can be used against you will be used against you. You just have to understand that in politics. So once a pastor makes a big mistake in doing or practicing something, even if he repents of it. For example, I know of a pastor who left his wife to marry a secretary. That man was removed from the ministry, and he should have been.
Rightly so, yes.
And you don't say, well, he can be forgiven that. Well, that may be, but that doesn't mean he gets back in the ministry,
that's right.
Diane.
Okay. All right.
Okay, thank you so much for calling. Yeah, we need to understand what forgiveness is and what forgiveness isn't. When I forgive someone, let's say...
I always make this distinction. Forgiveness and trust are two different things.
Very good.
You can forgive somebody for...
doing something,
maybe doing
you.
Something
yeah.
to your kids. You know,
yes.
I mean, that as bad as that is, that can be forgiven, but that doesn't mean you trust them to babysit your kids again.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, so they're two different things entirely.
Yeah, forgiveness is really dealing with whether you're going to get even or not. Mm-hmm. By the way, I think a lot of Christians don't think they've forgiven, and they have, because they think that forgiveness means forgive and forget, and they can't forget, so they don't think they've forgiven. No. Forgiveness means you're not going to get even. So if somebody came in and robbed my store, I'm not going to go find out where they live and go rob their house. I've forgiven them, but I'm calling the police in order that they get the temporal consequences. And I might even visit them in jail and talk to them about Jesus Christ and why I've forgiven them. So forgiveness doesn't mean you don't get out of the temporal consequences.
Right.
Forgiveness is talking about getting out of the eternal consequences. And that, of course, comes from the cross of Christ. Father, forgive them, for they...
know not what they do.
Exactly. So, yes, once a person makes a big mistake... Now, she mentioned Todd Akin. People have to make up their mind how big a mistake that was. And so for some people, it's not that big a mistake, and they're just going to still vote for him. But you have to understand the other side will start using this again and again and again... And all they have to do is bring out women who were accosted, did become pregnant, brought the child to term, and say, well, according to his thinking, it means I did not have a legitimate rape. And that's just, you know, you have to be aware of what position you've put yourself in, the party, etc., just like a pastor does. Once we fall from grace, no amount of forgiveness is going to bring us back under those circumstances. And that's where the Roman Catholic Church made a mistake in keeping those priests on who had accosted little children. So when homosexuality like that is rampant within the church, you've got to take a stand and remove those priests. And now they're suffering because they didn't do that. They thought forgiveness was sufficient, and it certainly isn't. Now, we don't want to get into all these big levels with little children in Sunday school. But I think what Titus is saying here is something that can also be good for the laity. First of all, there's a big distinction between pastors and laity, in that pastors are called to preach and to teach, and laity are called to witness. But when they witness, they also ought to do so according to sound doctrine. So how would you get that across to your Sunday school kids?
Just the way you said it.
Yeah. Well, like when they're talking to others, that what they say to them, you don't say, no, Jesus doesn't love you because you did that. That would be wrong.
Right.
But you talk about how they're forgiven like you were.
That's right. I think it's important to stress to them that, you know, that even people that are not pastors, you know, have been given the authority to share the gospel with others.
Well, that's called witnessing. You
know, right.
Yeah. Witnessing, I make a huge difference between sermons, Bible studies, and witnessing. Any layman can do witnessing. But to do a sermon or a Bible study, you really need to be trained in the original Hebrew and Greek, or you're just going to kind of give a confirmation-type level of instruction, and people aren't really going to be fed. And I really give a lot of credit to those pastors who make sure that they are the ones teaching the Bible study. At your church, I understand you don't teach the Bible study.
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh,
yes.
I thought Okamoto did.
Well, he is this Sunday. We kind of trade off once in a while.
That's
but
good.
Yeah, we both
but
share.
But he's
that.
The pastor also.
Yes, right.
Yeah, he's excellent. And when are your services?
5 o'clock Saturday evening, 9 a.m. Sunday morning at Prince of Peace Lutheran Church in Crestwood.
Okay, and tomorrow we'll continue with the 12th Sunday after Pentecost. Are wives to submit to their husbands? I should have asked you that. Tomorrow, God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Or email lawgospel@lawgospel.com. Law and Gospel is archived for your listening convenience at KFUO.org.